Showing mercy,
Badram,
of good fortune,
of you,
of you, Abraham, das mein mein Darshanam.
That's my name.
Yes. Pritha, you have done it. Translation of Rashi was said, you are all the sons of King Prashnabhari, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you, just to show my mercy upon you. By these words, Rashi indicates that what the princes were going to do was known to them. It is a fact that they were going to worship Lord Vishnu by severe austerities and penances. Knowing this fact, Rashi immediately became very pleased, as apparent by the next verse. This is indicated that a person who is not yet a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but who desires to serve the Supreme Lord, receives the benedictions of the demigods, headed by the chief demigod Lord Shiva. Now thus, a devotee of the Lord does not need to try to please the demigods separately. Simply by worshiping the Supreme Lord, a devotee can please all of them, nor does he have to ask the demigods for material benedictions. For the demigods, being pleased with the devotee, automatically offer him everything that he needs. The demigods are servants of the Lord, and they are always prepared to help a devotee in all circumstances. Therefore, Srila Bilva Mangal Thakur said that if one has unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Lord, the goddess of liberation is ready to serve him, to say nothing of the gods of material opulences. Indeed, all the demigods are simply waiting for an opportunity to serve the devotee. Thus, there is no need for a devotee of Krishna to endeavor for material opulence or liberation. Situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, which is all the benefits of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Lord Shiva continued, any person who is surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, control over everything material nature as well as the living energy, is actually very dear to me. Therefore, now Lord Shiva explains the reason he is person to come before the princess. It is because all the princes are devotees of Lord Krishna, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. After many births and deaths, he was actually in knowledge, surrenders unto me, knowing me, the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Lord Shiva is rarely seen among common men, and similarly a person who is fully surrendered unto Vasudeva Krishna is also very rarely seen, because a person who is fully surrendered unto Lord Krishna is very rare. Consequently, Lord Shiva came especially to see the Prachetas, because they were fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vasudeva is also mentioned in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam and the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Since Vasudeva is the ultimate truth, Lord Shiva openly proclaims that one who was a devotee of Lord Vasudeva, who is surrendered to Lord Krishna, is actually very dear to him. Lord Vasudeva Krishna is worshipable not only by ordinary divinities, but by demigods like Lord Shiva Brahma and others. Yam Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutastu Bhanti Ivya Istavayu. Krishna is worshipped by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Varuna, Indra, Chandra, and all the demigods. That is also the situation of the devotee. Indeed, one who takes to Krishna consciousness immediately becomes very dear to anyone who is simply finding out and beginning to understand what Krishna consciousness actually is. Similarly, all the demigods are also trying to find out who is actually surrendered to Lord Vasudeva. Because the Prachetas princes were surrendered to Vasudeva, Lord Shiva willingly came forth to see them. Lord Vasudeva Krishna is described in Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, actually is the enjoyer and the supreme as well. He is the enjoyer of everything, property of Purusha. Being influenced by the three modes of material nature, the living energy tries to dominate material nature, but actually he is not the Purusha, but Prakriti, as described in Bhagavad Gita, Aparaya Tasmanya. The deeper living energy is actually property or the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. Being associated with material energy, he tries to lord over material nature. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. The living entities in this conditional world are by eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditional life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses which you put in mind. By endeavoring to dominate material nature, the living entity simply struggles hard for existence. Indeed, he struggles so hard to enjoy himself that he cannot even enjoy the material resources. Thus, he sometimes calls Prakriti or Jiva for a situation of original potency. When the living entity is covered with the three modes of material nature, he is called Jiva Samhita. There are two kinds of living entities. One is called Kshara, that is called Akshara. Kshara refers to those who have fallen down and become conditioned. Akshara refers to those who are not conditioned. The vast majority of living entities live in the spiritual world called Akshara. They are in the position of Brahman, pure spiritual existence, that is, from those who are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. Being above both Akshara and Akshara, Lord Krishna Vasudeva is described in Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama. The impersonalists may say that Vasudeva is an impersonal Brahman, but actually impersonal Brahman is subordinate to Krishna, as also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. That Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman is also confirmed in Brahma Samhita. Yasya Prabhupada Jagaranda Koti, the impersonal Brahman is nothing but the effulgence or bodily rays of Krishna. And in those bodily rays there are innumerable universes floating. And thus, in all respects, Vasudeva Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and Lord Shiva is very satisfied with those who are completely surrendered to him. Complete surrender is desired by Krishna, as he indicates in the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Sarvagavan Parajajam Amityam Sarvagavan. The word sakshat, meaning directly, is very significant. There are many so-called devotees, but actually they're only karmis and gyanis, but they are not directly devotees of Lord Krishna. The karmis sometimes offer the results of their activities to Lord Vasudeva, and this offering is called karmapa. These are considered to be fruit of activities, but the karmis considered Lord Vishnu to be one of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Because they consider Lord Vishnu to be on the same level as the demigods, they contend that surrendering to the demigods is as good as surrendering to Vasudeva. This contention is denied herein, because if it were true, Lord Shiva would have said that surrendering to him, Vasudeva, Vishnu or Brahma is the same. However, Lord Shiva does not say this because he himself surrenders unto Vasudeva, and whoever else surrenders unto Vasudeva is very, very dear to him. This is expressed herein openly. The conclusion is that a devotee of Lord Shiva is not dear to Lord Shiva, but a devotee of Lord Krishna is very large dear to Lord Shiva. Translation: Lord Shiva said, "You are all the sons of King Prashnabari, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you, just to show my mercy to you." Lord Shiva continued, "Any person who is surrendered to the Supreme Personality, Godhead, Krishna, the controller of everything, material nature as well as the living entity, is actually very dear to me." So, here we have a statement by Shiva himself that he is very pleased with those who are surrendered to Bhagavan, Vasudeva. And then he defines the nature of that Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. In other words, we have Shiva beginning to actually define the position of the Supreme Lord in relation to Shiva, Devatas, and Shivas, and material energy. So that definition we call Sambandhagyan. That is a philosophical analysis of the real world, what exists, and how it exists in relation to other things. So we have different concepts. The main concept being that there is Brahman, which is spread everywhere, and everything else is illusion. So there's only one real entity, Brahman. And then we have the other concept. There's a Supreme Lord, and there's a material world, and there are jivas. And none of them are illusory. So we have more than one real thing. That is a very basic difference in philosophy, to say everything is illusion except Brahman, and to say there's a real world, there's a real God, there's a real jiva. So accepting these reals is the Vaishnava philosophy. So all Vaishnava philosophies understand this, that we have different types of real things. And in one reality, this is the philosophy of Shankaracharya, Advaita philosophy. Now, of course, one can have Brahman and the real world too, an impersonal Brahman and the real world, but actually it's a little bit contradictory for Shankaracharya, so therefore he eliminates the material world altogether, says it's merely an illusion. He doesn't want anything except Brahman. So, and that Brahman, of course, is without qualities or activities or anything. In the Bhagavatam, of course, this idea of everything is illusion is completely rejected. Nowhere is it stated that everything is illusory. If it is stated as illusory, it's only secondarily, in the sense that it is temporary or whatever. And of course, when Krishna himself speaks of jnana in the 11th canto, there he does talk about everything illusion, etc., like that. That's a philosophy. But that is within the context of his speaking about jnana itself, that philosophy, not that he is maintaining that philosophy. So, the main import of Bhagavatam is to show that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. And that means he's supreme. So, this impersonal Brahman is not supreme. The deliverance of people is to worship Krishna in Kali Yuga, not to worship Brahman. And the process of realizing Krishna is through the process of bhakti, not through jnana. So that is the main import of the Bhagavatam, and everything is related to that. So here Lord Shiva is talking about Bhagavan, even though of course Shiva is also called Bhagavan. Here he's referring to Vasudev as Bhagavan. And he's saying that anyone who is surrendered to Vasudev is very dear to Lord Shiva. So in other words, Lord Shiva is praising the Supreme Lord. And he also defines the relationship between the Supreme Lord and everything else. As somebody says, that Supreme Lord is the controller of everything else. He's superior to the three gunas and the jiva. He is completely different from jivas and material energy. So he doesn't say anything is false, but he says they are, he is supreme. So that is the relationship. We have the Supreme Lord, and we have other entities, but they're not supreme. Which means they're under his control. He is the controller, and they are the control. So we have the jiva, and we have property in the three gunas. So this is the relationship between these real things. We have Supreme Lord, the material energy, we have jiva. And the jiva and material energy are under the control of the Supreme Lord. That's why he's called Supreme. So this is a very basic principle that all the Vaishnavas accept. So that means, and they're all real, and they don't change. They're all eternal. So property doesn't become the Lord, or jiva does not become the Lord, or the Lord does not become the jiva, or the Lord does not become property. Okay? They are distinct entities. Once that is established, then the only thing is to answer all sorts of challenges to that. And that is why we have more detailed philosophy. No, actually we don't need anything else. We have to say Lord is supreme and everything else is dependent on him. But then the intelligence begins to inquire how. So the Supreme Lord is supreme, and we say he's perfect and everything else. So why does he have, why do you need anything else if he's supreme? He's the cause of everything. Why does he need anything else? He's perfect. He doesn't need anything. So why do we have the material world of jivas anyway? We don't need it. We just need Supreme Lord. So that way, we can say that, no, we just need one entity. Why do we have three? Why not just have one? So that has to be answered. Why the Lord has these other entities around at all when he's perfect in himself? So, of course, the answers are given in the Upanishads and in the Brahma Sutras. They talk about this, why there is material world, why there is jivas, etc. It gives answers also. So that's one problem. The other problem is once we get these other things, the jivas and the material world, we know that material world is achit and jiva comes under conditioning. So they don't look very perfect. So how can the Lord create imperfect things? So first of all, why does he create imperfect things and then other things? And then how can he create imperfect things? If we can accept that he has avatar forms and everything, they're all perfect, fine. But why would he create other things which are achit, like material energy, and causes suffering for the jiva? Why does the great jiva live in ignorance? Why is there ignorance? That's another question that has to be answered. If the Lord is perfect, why does he do all this? The Vaishnavas have to answer all of this. Why is it like this? If we don't have them, it's fine. If only Brahman, we don't have to answer any of these questions. Why there's nothing? There isn't anything else. Only Brahman is perfect, finished. Well, once you get other things, then you have to say why he does this and how can he have them here when he's supposed to be perfect and we've got material world with suffering and illusion. How is it possible that the Lord can create all this? So, therefore, we do have these philosophies. And different Vaishnavas will explain it different ways. So, Ramanuja explains one way, and Madhva explains another way, Nimbarka explains another way, Lord Chaitanya explains it another way. Balabha explains another way. So there are various ways in which one can explain the relationship between the Lord and why he has this creation, whatever thing, how it relates to the Lord, and how we can say everything is perfect in the Lord when we do have material world and all that suffering. So the answer is found in the various philosophies. So as I said, that philosophy actually doesn't really have to exist except because we do have an inquiring mind, so we have to answer this question. In the spiritual world, they don't have philosophy. They don't care about the material world. So nobody really wonders about that. But when we're in the material world, then we have this inquisitiveness to wonder why it is like that or whatever. So we have to understand the nature of the Supreme Lord in relation to other things. So we have these different philosophies. In any case, here Lord Shiva is recognizing this sambandha gyan, Supreme Lord, jiva, material energy. And anyone who recognizes the supremacy of the Supreme Lord and surrenders to him, says, that person is very dear to me. In other words, Lord Shiva is praising the devotees of the Supreme Lord. He's praising the Supreme Lord and the devotees of the Supreme Lord. That's his initial position here. And then later on, he gives prayers to illustrate the position of the Lord, material energy, etc. His eternal body. He doesn't give up his body. His eternal body. Shiva. He's Ishvara. He's not a jiva. He's not a fragmental part. But he manifests less powers than Vishnu, therefore he's called Shiva.
Why this what would be the answer for body Vaishnava? Since Lord is perfect, so why jiva is the first?
Oh well, the common principle is that this is explained in the Vedanta Sutra, Lila Tvat, Lila of the Lord. To express his bliss, the Lord has many expansions as an expression of his bliss.
In the argument, a lot of bliss, why should the jiva be something? Well, most of them are not suffering in the spiritual world, they're enjoying. So it's only a little bit of jivas. And of course, all we can say is, why do jivas have independence? That's all. Why does the Lord give jivas independence? If they didn't, then what would they be? The nature of consciousness is, has some independence. So that's why it's like that. And then we say, well, why the jiva can make mistakes with his independence? It's because he's infinitesimal. So why is he infinitesimal? If he weren't, then he'd be God. So he's either God or not God. If he's not God and then he's conscious, then it's possible that he can make mistakes. So therefore, then we have some jivas make mistakes. That's Chitrapal Shiva, protector of the Dham. So they worship him because he protects the Dham.
Yeah, he is also omniscient. He is Ishwara. Ishwara. Well, we give importance to Krishna more than anyone else. Well, Shiva, you see, is, again, he's lesser than the Vishnu forms. He manifests less powers than them, so therefore he's in the lesser category. But he's not a living entity like the Jivas, so he's greater than the Devatas.
In terms of seeking his blessings, from that perspective, we don't need to do so much. For example, we worship Vaishnava, then we worship Guru, and like that, but we don't really consider Vaishnava or worship, per se.
Well, I suppose those in the Shiva Sampradaya will, because he's in charge of the Sampradaya.
Your
Or if we happen to visit the demigods temples, what perception we should see the demigods, whether the demigods are a devotee of Krishna?
Well, they, as demigods, they are devotees of the Lord. They're not independent. They're servants of the Lord. Devotees of the Lord. So in the Nectar Devotees, one should not disrespect the devotees.
Lord, is it that when we worship Krishna, we worship the Vaishnavas also? So as such, we do worship Shiva also when we worship Krishna.
Everything is included in Krishna. All of the worship.
Jantrasi Sushimakarasi, Jantramarasi, Jivangasi Sivatrupavati, Bhagupravanam.
Thank you.